everyone, and welcome back to Let's Draw This for a Minute, the podcast that took a deep dive into Steven Spielberg's 1975 masterpiece and is now setting sail into uncharted waters to discover the world beyond Jaws. I'm your co-host, MJ Smith.
And I'm Sarah Buttery, and we're back for a new season. We did not take loads of months off like we did
Hooray, we did it. Good job, everyone.
We did it.
Teamwork.
Yeah. If you haven't guessed already, we're incredibly excited about this new season. It is monster movie season. This is our first episode of our new season, covering some really, really great, really interesting films across this season. So hope you guys love it. Watch along as well. We're going to tell you in a bit where you can watch this film that we're talking about today, which is Frankenstein. So we'd love for you guys to, yeah, to get involved, watch the film as well. Let us know what you think. And yeah, hopefully you enjoy this season as much as I think we are going to. MJ, are you pumped for monster movie season?
I'm so excited for monster movie season.
Yeah.
Especially if this film is any indication.
Yeah. Off to a great start. Also, a rare first watch for both of us, which
Yeah. The thing is, I know this film is any indication because I've seen almost every other movie, I think, except for one.
Yeah, there's a few on this list that I haven't seen, but especially when we get into the latter half, I have seen a lot of these films, and some of the films we're talking about are in my favourites of all time. So I think this is going to be a season that we have a lot of fun with, and I'm keen as well, like we obviously did in our shark season, we were bringing up Jaws references, and, you know, Jaws was a constant in those conversations, and it will continue to be across this season as well. So just because we're talking about monster movies does not mean that we're going to not talk about Jaws. Most of my notes about Frankenstein are also about Jaws.
Yeah, no so, shit.
Yeah, so even though we're not doing our huge deep dive minute by minute through Jaws anymore, that is still very much the focus of this pod and what we will be bringing up constantly. So yeah, very much looking forward to that. So, I think we can get stuck into talking about it. I'm excited. We're talking about 1931's Frankenstein. Lots of versions of Frankenstein, but that's the one we're going with. and this film is directed by James Whale. It stars Colin Clive, Mae Clark, Boris Karloff, and John Bowles. MJ, where did you manage to watch this film?
Well, I'm a fancy lad, and I have it on 4K. I have the Universal Monsters Collection Volume 1 on 4K, which is The Mummy, Dracula, Frankenstein, and one other movie that I forget, Invisible Man. so I watched it on that. But if you are not a fancy lad like I am, it's available for streaming on something called Classics with an X that I've never heard of. So your mileage may vary. You can also rent or buy it pretty much anywhere you can rent or buy digital movies. Apple, Amazon, Google, YouTube, Vudu, all that. Everywhere. It's literally all the common places, but you do have to pay for it if you're going to stream it.
Yeah, not a difficult one to find. We also have Classics with an X available here. As far as I can see, I didn't download the app because we watched it elsewhere, but it looks pretty straightforward. You don't have, there's no subscription, I'm guessing you have to put in an email or something to sign up. I'll probably take a look and see what other movies are on there. I've not heard of it before either until I was doing this, and it said that was where it was available to watch. But yeah, like you said, it's also available on Amazon, Sky Store, Google, all of the YouTube, probably all the places where you can find things to rent. It is there. Okay, MJ, thoughts on Frankenstein?
This movie's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, it is.
I fucking loved it so much. It's so good, top to bottom. It's, what is it? It's like 70 minutes?
Yeah, hour 11.
Yeah, it's 71 minutes long, A+, all the way around. It is all killer, no filler. This shit just gets you right into Frankenstein stuff. Like, it's just like, oh, Frankenstein? We got Frankenstein. and then it just keeps doing Frankenstein stuff the whole time. It also is crazy to me, like, watching it, I was just like, oh, so every movie is Frankenstein. Got it. Like, it's like the Jack Antonoff quote from the Sparks Brothers movie from Edgar Wright, where he says all pop music is just Sparks rearranged. It's just every horror movie is just Frankenstein rearranged. All of them. Like, I was just like, oh, it's a 71-minute movie that is just every horror movie I've ever seen has at least some sort of nod to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this film is so good. And I'm always like, when you're watching an older film, and this film is, what did we work it out? 93 years old. Good Lord. It looks so good. I mean, I was just watching it on a kind of equivalent of Blu-ray, but I can only imagine that the 4K looked crisp.
It was nuts. Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that doesn't age it as much as you would expect for a film that is this freaking old is that it's pretty much all makeup and practical effects. It is the guy in the suit or the guy with some makeup on to make him look like the monster. There isn't even really many, if any, kind of lightning-y effects, like a little, but it's nothing too, you know, that would sort of like date it and think, oh, okay, yeah, that does look like it was made then. Timeless, like completely timeless. Mm-hmm. You're right. Mm-hmm. That like this, there's not just 1,000 versions of Frankenstein's. There's like Frankenstein adjacent. There are two currently playing in theaters. There is Poor Things, and there is what, Lisa Frankenstein. Is that what that film's called? Mm-hmm.
I just got that was a Lisa Frank pun.
Yeah, I didn't get that until I looked at it earlier as well.
I just got that it's a Lisa Frank pun. There's two versions of Frankenstein out now. I mean, a film I'd seen before that I'm probably going to end up talking about a lot, and I'm going to out you that you haven't seen it. I've seen this movie countless times and never seen Frankenstein, is Young Frankenstein. And there's bits of it that are straight out of this movie. Like, watching, and by the way, of course, audience member, I immediately put on Young Frankenstein as soon as credits rolled on Frankenstein.
I just need more Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, it just felt like the right thing to do, because watching Young Frankenstein is always the right thing to do. And like, yes, obviously it's a riff on the Frankenstein story, so it's gonna have a lot of similarities, but there's so much in Frankenstein that made jokes that I've understood in Young Frankenstein make even more sense and even funnier. And it just, like, especially just really close on the heels of watching Frankenstein, it made Young Frankenstein, a movie I already loved, like, even better. I've seen Young Frankenstein probably 8-9 times now, and it's one of those, it just holds up. Like, I showed it to my roommate and she fucking loved it. And that movie is also 50 years old this year. Like, it's just, there's something about that story, I think, that just works in pretty much any context, because you know what else is a Frankenstein story is Jurassic Park. Like, it's the same story. It just happens to be about bringing dinosaurs back to life rather than, like, a reanimated dead guy. But other than that, it's the exact same movie.
Yeah, it's a fairly, pun intended, I guess, universal film in the sense that it's not just about the monster. And this is what we talk about with Jaws all the time, right? It's not just about the shark. And what is so great about this film is that it is dealing with these things that are so universal, these themes and ideas, this God complex, this man wanting to meddle in the things that are, you know, not to be meddled with, the fine line that exists between genius and madness. These are things that we see in so many other films, and they all come from this. And I know you were reading the book as well. I don't know, did you finish it before watching?
No. But it's very different.
Very different. Yeah, I'm maybe about half the way through the book.
I'm probably about the same way.
Yeah, also, like, you read it in school, so didn't really read it, as we said. But it's pretty slow. It's pretty slow going, especially to start with. So I was pleasantly surprised when started this film, and it's just like, oh, they are immediately in the graveyard and this guy is digging up bodies. Mm-hmm. Like, that's where you start it. Like, you throw us into it straight away. And yet, I had to pause it and get the timestamp. It's 31 minutes before we fully see Frankenstein's monster in his full in his full form. Like, we see bits of him, sort of like top of his head or a hand or something, but you don't see him come alive and sort of stand and see what he looks like until more than half an hour into this movie. And for a film that is 71 minutes long, like, that's a long time to go without seeing him. And it did remind me of Jaws and how we go so long without seeing the shark, but yet the build up to it, this idea of, like, we know that whatever is under this sheet on this lab table is something that is to be feared, and so it builds that excitement and does sort of, like, throw you into the most interesting part of the story, which the book kind of doesn't. There is a lot more build up in the book, but I'm glad that the film kind of went with, no, let's just start off from this guy putting this monster together.
Yeah. Yeah, because so it's also based off of a play.
Yeah.
I don't know how pacing wise it matches up with the play. Where it's like, Peggy Webling wrote the play in 1927. Mm-hmm. So I imagine they may have cribbed, like, the pacing from that, right? Where it's like, you don't necessarily in a stage production want to do, it's a hard piece to adapt because it's epistolary. So it's a lot of letters and diary entries. Sure. And it's a frame story. And so it's got, like, this is Victor's portion and then the creature's portion and then back to Victor's portion. So it goes with it. Like, it's weird that the structurally, the film I can think of that comes the closest to Frankenstein, the novel, is The Prestige, which is journal entries, which is on purpose. It's absolutely on purpose. The Prestige is just a Frankenstein movie. Like, it's the same. And the book is very much that as well. Like, the Prestige book is a much different story than the film, but also has that gothic frame story thing. Dracula has the same thing. Dracula's epistolary as a novel, and the Universal Dracula with Bela Lugosi is 75 minutes or something. Like, it's so short. Yeah. All of these are. Bride of Frankenstein, I think, is also 75 minutes. They're all really, really, really tight, especially in comparison to the novels they're based on, but they still are able to, like, paw at the same themes, which is, in Frankenstein, is just, like, the hubris of man, right? Like, he has this great line where Victor says, "Henry, in the name of God," and Henry says, "In the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God," and his delivery on it's so good. Oh, it's so good. But, like, that's the crux of the thing, right? Is just, like, the meddlings of men in the natural order, right? Like, that is a very, very universal, pun not intended, story. And that's so malleable, right? Like, it's in Jaws, even, right? Like, that's Mayor Vaughn, right? Like, Henry Frankenstein is Mayor Vaughn, more or less. Like, there's a way this shit can get resolved, and it's by not fucking with anything. Like, it's just a fuck around and find out story, really.
Yeah. And it's this idea of the monster, and we'll get into it, I guess, in a little bit, if, like, is the monster actually bad, or is this just man kind of, you know, screwing things up as they usually do, but this, the idea of the monster being of man's own making. Mm-hmm. And we see that incredibly literally here. This man, he's called Henry in this, not Victor, isn't he? I'm gonna probably keep making that mistake, but that's fine. Yeah. Henry Frankenstein in this, we see him
Hank
getting
Frank.
The bodies. Hank Frank. Okay, that's what I'm calling him for the rest of the episode.
The Diary of Hank Frank.
No! I was about to make a really good point. Okay. Hank Frank, he is constructing this monster for what? Don't really know. I guess just to prove that he can, kind of. He's just experimenting, and he says that he's played around with doing sort of the same experiments on animals, right? But now he's trying it with a human and just seeing if he can do it and what the outcome of that is. Turns out, not good. But in a similar way, you could argue that the monster of Jaws, which is the shark, while it's not a monster of man's own making, the solution to making that problem go away was right there. You know, mm-hmm. they just meddled in things that were not supposed to be meddled with, as we see in Frankenstein as well. And again, outcome, not good. But leaving the monster, thinking about Jaws now, just like, if you had just left well alone and known that that's not the place of man to sort of be, where that particular monster is, then we said this on our minute by minute episodes, the rest of the film doesn't happen, right? If Mayor Vaughan had been like, yep, cool, close the beaches, credits, like, that's right. The end of Jaws.
Right.
And then the rest of the film doesn't exist. And in Frankenstein as well, it's like, okay, well, do your experiment, sure, but they react in a way that is basically how it seems to me anyway, tell me if I'm wrong or not, is like, the monster isn't really bad, they just kind of freak him out a bit, and then they misinterpret the monster freaking out as, oh no, he's trying to kill us all. But that is the monster that they have made themselves. Like, right. They have put themselves into this situation. Henry is mucking around with, you know, playing God and trying to bring something that is, you know, not even like just one person, like chopped up bits of other people stitched together to make another person and bring that thing to life. And then immediately, when it sort of backfires, is just not seemingly willing to own up to what he has done, the monster that he has made and brought into this world.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting, because it's like, there's two things at play with the monster in particular. There's the meddling in the natural order that Henry is doing, which is what John Hammond is doing, right? But then there is the viciously attacking something that's different than you, which is what the villagers are doing, right? Yeah. Like, and so it's interesting. I'd like to see and read more of this from around this era about some of the, I don't know if you picked up on this, I noticed a lot of not being flippant, a lot of like Jewish stuff in this movie. I couldn't find if anything in the film, like anyone involved with the film, was Jewish, and it was their way. What I found is that like it was kind of inspired by something called The Golem, which was a novel about Jewish folklore. I've heard of The Golem before. The Golem actually figured heavily into a book I read last year that I really liked. I've known about that piece of Jewish folklore. I don't really know a lot about it. I know it's been pretty malleable as well within Jewish folklore. It's been around since the medieval times, so like people adapt that as they see fit. but it's you know, it feels like it might be commenting on growing anti-Semitism in the 1930s. It feels to me like it also might be a comment, particularly with the set design, of the anti-Semitism found in the German expressionist films, like Nosferatu in particular, and also I sort of towards the end before they get up to the windmill, it sort of felt like this might be a stretch, but here we are. Henry going up the mountain to talk to Frankenstein's monster, Frankenstein, whatever, we're calling it Frankenstein, I don't care. It's that's fucking annoying. Henry going up to the mountain to talk to the creature feels sort of like creator meeting its creation at Sinai, like Moses and God meeting on the mountaintop before the Ten Commandments come down, to the point where I know what it's like to be God, the creator being God, Henry, Hank Frank, is carrying a torch, right? Like God assumed the form of a burning bush to speak with Moses. And he essentially, right, within the context of that story, imparts on Moses knowledge for the rest of humanity, which, or knowledge to be human as we have come to understand it, right? Like the Ten Commandments, and the Ten Commandments basically boil down to like be a decent person, more or less. And like that's sort of Hank's goal in this, right? Like, he doesn't really go to, like, destroy his creation, necessarily. I think I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, it does break down at a certain point, but it felt like Mount Sinai to me, where it was, like, creator meeting its creation on a mountaintop with fire playing heavily into it, you know? So, all of that is at play on top of just, like, the sort of John Hammond-y, the dudes in the, like, the Hugh Jackman character in The Prestige, like, all of the Mayor Vaughn-ness of it, like, there's that aspect, and then there's the, like, cultural impact of that as well, of, like, what racism does to a village, because does the creature kill that little girl? Yes. I laughed, but we'll talk about that later. that's not the point I'm making. It was very funny when he did that. But, like, when the dad brings her to the village, he's like, she's been murdered. But how does he know that? Like, he has no evidence of this, right? Like, and they just pin it on the creature automatically. Like, they happen to be right, yes, but, like, they also had just as much of a shot at being wrong based on who they targeted. They just targeted the thing that looked different from them. And so it's tough, right? Where it's like, they are right, but like, is that worth the loss of your own humanity in that pursuit of being right in the name of justice, right? And I would say that's even a theme that is explored in The Dark Knight with the mass surveillance shit. Like, you know, and so it's a really, really interesting movie. By the way, I got all of that out of 71 minutes. Why are movies so fucking long?
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for that, isn't there, really, in how efficiently this film tells the story. And I mean, I would have happily watched more of it because I was enjoying it, but it's, you know, the story itself is actually pretty short, all told, like, especially when it gets into the main meat of the story, like once you get past the letters and stuff in the beginning of the novel. Let's talk about this idea then, I guess, of like, is the monster actually bad? Because I think the film is quite clear about it, but also it leaves you things to make you question that as well, because the monster does kill people, but he is, for the most part, apart from the little girl, which is an accident, killing the people who have tried to attack him, who have either were the ones who created him, freaked him out with the fire, or chained him up and put him in the basement. Also, this is sort of established, certainly in this film and most Frankenstein adjacent films, that the monster has kind of the mind of a child, mm-hmm. like understands kind of very basic instructions, but doesn't really understand the range of human emotions. And why would you? Because while he might be, 7 foot, it seems, man, he's just been born. So of course hasn't worked all of this stuff out. And even the moment, like with the little girl, like he doesn't get that what he is doing is wrong. He's like, I've run out of flowers, so I will throw you in the, lake, not kind of understanding like what that actually means that he might intentionally cause her harm, because she is the only person in the film really who is kind to him. And that's very significant of her being a young girl as well, in that she hasn't got these prejudices. She doesn't see what all the adults see. She just sees like a person who looks lonely, and she sort of, you know, brings him down to her level and is like, play this game with me. And then obviously, yes, it does end in tragedy, but there wasn't intent behind that, right? Like there was more intent behind the monster killing the other people that he killed, but they were also the people that were, if all you've known is violence and people attacking you and screaming at you, then isn't that what you're gonna do? I mean, or isn't that how you're gonna respond? Like, not saying that that's the right thing to do, but then the thing that sort of throws some of this into question, I guess, and the movie is quite happy with letting this element be ambiguous, is this idea of the wrong brain was put in. There was like literally the jars, you know, with the brains in, one says normal, one says abnormal, and mm-hmm. the abnormal one, the corrupt brain, the criminal brain, whatever it is the one that is used in the experiment. But then you get into this like nature and nurture debate, right? Mm-hmm. would that have, that brain from that criminal that they used, did something happen to that person as well that sort of made them turn to a life of crime or doing things that are, you know, considered abnormal or corrupt or whatever? Is we know nothing about that brain or that person's circumstances, so it opens up a very interesting debate, I think, about whether some, you know, whether these things are learned or whether that is just in a person's nature anyway. But pretty much from the moment the monster is, quote, born, all he knows and sees is hostility, right?
Right. And I think you could view that as like a post-World War I viewing, right? Of like,
sure.
this is kids like born into a world of violence, right? Because we're just recovering from the Great War, and now we're on the brink of war in Europe again with these two chuckle fucks rising to power in Italy and Germany. Like, it is nature versus nurture, right? Of like, well, if you bear children into violence, they're going, like, it's going to beget violence. The thing with the little girl is tough, because it's like, well, I think the movie is clear that it was not his intent to kill her. Like,
yeah.
he's just a little guy. Like that's kind of the tone the movie takes. It was just like people have just been cruel to him because he looks different, or he doesn't have communication skills the way that we do, right?
Sure.
You know, and we both of us recently saw Poor Things, and that mm-hmm. is a film that I think both of us had some problems with. But I think one of the things that it does well is see, one, the development of that within the creature over time, and yep. then also how a lot of people who are not her get a lot of say in what happens in her life, in a way that is ultimately detrimental to her. And I'm not just talking about like the obviously manipulative character of Mark Ruffalo, but like you could argue that Willem Dafoe and the assistant guy also get way more say in how her life is going than she does, at least at the beginning. And it's a story it is feminist in its themes, but it is a story of her coming into her own and making her own decisions and growing up and being her own person. And the creature in this film never is afforded that opportunity. And so it is tough where it's like, well, this person who doesn't, it's not even that they don't know better. It's that like, you know, you see kids and how they are, they try shit. That's how they learn. Right. Like 90% of the human experience is fucking around and finding out. Like, and like, and like, yeah, it's for the most part, most of us do not need to be explicitly told to not harm people. But you could also argue that like the creature's afraid of fire. If he's near water, he's like, water's got to be good since this is the opposite of fire. Water's water's the thing that combats fire. So it's got to be fine. You know, like it's at what point is he to be held accountable? Because like, yes, he did kill a little girl, but he didn't murder. Like it calls into question intent, right? Which is super interesting, super interesting. It also has a really good joke in Young Frankenstein when the creature meets a little girl at a well, and they do the same thing. And she goes, "We've run out of flowers. What else should we throw in the well?" And then the creature just does a Jim Halpert look dead in the camera, and then the scene fades to black.
Real good. Real good. Yeah, I mean, it's that scene is so fascinating. And what I realized when I was watching the film is that I have seen that clip before because... Mm-hmm. A huge shock to everyone I know, but I was also a nerdy little teenager. So when I was in school, I was in film club. And that was one of the scenes that we watched and discussed and talked about, which shout out to whoever the teacher was who put on that film club. Like, well done.
Yeah.
You started something in me that I didn't realize was a thing until much, much later. And now here we are talking about it on the podcast. Life finds a way, I guess, to quote Ian Malcolm. real stupid.
They were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think about whether they should.
I mean, further Jaws parallel in the fact that it kind of like goes there with killing a kid as well. And
in full view of the camera.
Right. Did not go unnoticed. I mean, we'll probably cover the like the censorship of this film in a little bit as well. That was one of the scenes deemed, nope, we cannot show this monster killing this child. But what that, there's so much meaning just in that scene and so much that you can take away from just that small moment in both how the innocence, if you will, like the child in this case represents innocence, right? She is her view of the world and of other people has not been clouded in the way that the adults has. So she just sees a person who needs a friend and immediately just kind of, you know, brings him into the game that she is playing. And being shown that kindness is obviously not something that the monster is used to. So, yes, he does something that is wrong, but he doesn't understand that what he has done is wrong, which is what we're saying, right? Like, he doesn't go up to that girl and go, mm-hmm. I am going to kill this small child by throwing her in the lake. That's not that's right. not what it is at all. He
right. Yeah.
I mean, I can't even remember. He doesn't like want to. He's walking away from her, right? And she's like, "No, come here." And mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, like he's trying like, to stay low, right? Like, and yeah. it is this idea of like, yeah, children don't see that shit. Like that, like hate is taught, right? Like that's mm-hmm. the idea of like. Well, yeah, hate is not something that is has to be removed from children, you know, like children take people as they are on their own terms by and large.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so she just sees a guy and is like, hey, check this shit out, you know, like that's sort of her vibe is like, look at this, isn't this neat, you know? And she just shares this thing with him that she's excited about because that's what kids do. Like, all kids do that. Kind of doesn't matter who. You know what I mean? Like, the kid's yeah. excited about something, they just want to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And him being childlike as well is just, like, happy to be involved mm-hmm. and sort of, like, willing to get stuck in and is enjoying the game and then... this lack of understanding and not knowing that throwing this girl in the lake is potentially going to be dangerous to him. And in his eyes, that's just like the next part of the game, right? Like mm-hmm, it's, mm-hmm. and it could have been as well. Like, I don't know if this should have been a better swimmer or something. Then it right. could have, this scene like could end in one of two ways, like tragedy, as it does, mm-hmm. or the girl's sort of like, what a funny joke, you threw me in the lake, and she's fine at the end of it. But the monster doesn't do what he does with the like express intention of I want to cause harm to this person, because she has been nice to him and she's the only person who has been nice to him. Mm-hmm. And that is yeah, it's such an incredibly important moment in the film that packs so much into just a couple of minutes. Like, yes, it is a little bit funny when he throws her in the lake. I think it's the nonchalance, that, like, the way that he does it.
Yeah.
But again, that's, like, that's proving our point, right? It's not done with malice or intent. It's done with the, like, I've run out of flowers. Where's the next nearest thing to me that I can throw in? He yeah. doesn't understand that she's, like, not going to float like a flower. Like, he doesn't understand that he right. is like a baby or a child in terms of you know development at this stage.
Yeah, well, I think I also made it funnier by when he did it, I did say yeet.
You only have yourself to blame in this yeah. situation.
Yeah, of course I do. This is the fucking story of my life. Yeah, that's putting yeah it's, title of my autobiography. Yeah, I wasn't mad about it though. Other people were.
What, mad that you loved?
Mad that I said yeet.
I don't know. Sometimes stuff's funny and you have to call it out. I laughed at the bit. I don't know if it was meant to be menacing, but you know when he like is in Elizabeth's bedroom?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it seems like he does don't know how else to phrase this, a sexy growl.
Yes. Uh-huh. Sure does. Yep.
Like uh-huh. a growl.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And I was like, don't know if that was intended, but that's kind of funny. Yep.
someone I was watching with said, that's how I scare people. And I said, that's how I talk to sexy ladies. So I get it.
No.
I fully get it. Oh, also, while we're on this subject, one of the things, this is one of the reasons why you got to watch Young Frankenstein. These fucking Eastern European accents are atrocious across the board. Speaking of unintentionally funny stuff. But there is a scene where, oh man, is he not? Is he? Okay, he is American. Okay. Henry's passed out or he's passing out, like he's on the brink of exhaustion. And so like Elizabeth and Victor and Dr. Waldman come, and I think Baron Frankenstein, who is the best character in the movie, go in and like save him from his exhaustion, not really necessarily knowing about everything that's gotten out of hand with the creature. Mm-hmm. And they know that the creature exists. And Dr. Wald, Baron von Frankenstein is like, I'm taking you home. And Hank Frank is like, hey, what about my research? And Dr. Waldman's like, yeah, I'll take care of it or whatever. And he's like, well, what about the creature? And Dr. Waldman says, I will see to it that he is painlessly destroyed. But this motherfucker straight up says penisly destroyed. We had to rewind it and be like, what did he just say? Like, I had to rewind it. And then my roommate and her friend were talking in another room. And I was like, hey, guys, come here. And they were like, penisly. And I was like, yeah, I know.
I didn't pick up on that because I had subtitles on. I feel like that tricks your brain sometimes.
Yeah, he goes, I will see to it that he is penisly destroyed. And I was like, there's no, nope, he said penisly. And then there is a character in Young Frankenstein whose entire bit is that you can't understand his super thick Eastern European, shitty Eastern European accent. Like he talks about following in his, they were like, yeah, he's following. He goes, he's following in his grandfather's footsteps. And the whole crowd goes, what? And he goes, footsteps, footsteps, footsteps. So that's a gag in Young Frankenstein that these accents are really bad.
Yeah, to the point where I don't know what this says about me and my terrible hearing, but like didn't even really realize that they were trying to do accents, because I was just kind of like, oh, this is one of those films that they say is set in Europe, but yet everyone just kind of talks in this like weird transatlantic accent that everyone seemed to have, just generic. I am a person with an accent. It sound like some of them stronger than others. The doctor, for sure, had the worst and strongest accent. But I don't know if I didn't hear it in anyone else. I don't know if that's just me. But
I think Baron Frankenstein had something.
Yeah, I was distracted by how great he was.
He was so great, man. Ah, he was so good. That guy was awesome.
I think he and the monster give my favorite performances in this, but we'll talk more about that.
Yeah. Oh, Boris Karloff's so good in this, but Baron von Frankenstein is so, he's so funny. Like he's just like, he just can't be arsed with anything. Like that's his whole vibe. It reminds me a lot of Hugh Laurie in Sense and Sensibility, where he's just like, all right, I'm doing this, but I'm really annoyed that any of this shit has to happen.
The bit that made me laugh so much, because I saw a lot of myself in this, is when he's at the windmill thing and he's like complaining about the stairs. Mm-hmm. And he's like, there's not even a banister. I don't know how I'm going to get up these stairs. And I was like, well, that's me.
I liked when he says something to Victor, and he says, were you kicked by a horse? That was really funny. His pipe in his first scene is incredible.
Great. Great. Paid actor, that pipe was, I believe,
yep.
In this.
Yep. Yeah. He's
the
really...
end as well with the wine is so funny. Like, it's such a funny note to end the film on as well, because, like, incredibly dramatic scene. Great scene with the windmill on fire, and we've just had, you know, the torches and pitchforks of the neighbor, like the neighborhood chasing this monster away, setting fire to him, and we're just like basically watching him burn alive. And then it's like, well, they're back at Frankenstein Manor, and he's just enjoying this lovely old wine surrounded by all the maids in the house, just having a jolly old time. It's just a very funny way to end the film. Like, you could have ended it on, like, the building going up in flames and, like, the chilling kind of screams of the monster, but it's like, nope.
Yeah, he's just like, wow, that shit got out of hand, huh? Well, que sera, sera. Yeah. Like, that's the vibe.
Yeah, really funny. And unexpected as well. Like, I don't know. I'm not always expecting a film like this to be intentionally funny. Like, yes, there will be unintentionally funny things because it's 93 years ago. So there's bound to be things that we watch as a modern audience in an older film and go, that's kind of funny, even if it was not intended to be.
Which is how I felt about the little girl die. I just, like, for a movie that old to be that graphic, like, was just really caught me off guard. Like, I was just like, oh, this is pre-code. This has to be pre-code.
Sure was. I was reading about it because I knew that this, obviously, when this came out, and then obviously when the code was brought in, and then it was reissued and really, really cut down. Some things were only recovered, like, in the 80s, I think. Whoa. Like, the 1980s, that stuff was kind of put back in. But yeah, the scene where the monster throws Maria as a little girl was kind of controversial then, and I guess funny now. But yeah, that was cut. And also, interestingly, just, you know, how wild the code was. The line, the great line of, like, in the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God, was cut because it was considered blasphemous.
That's wild.
So, yeah, there was, at one point, like, so many cuts made that basically half the film was removed. Curious part of me, like, wants to see that version because it would resemble nothing of what we actually have now.
That's like,
so it was,
that's like listening to radio edits of NWA music. Like, why would you do that?
Right. It was actually, interestingly, it was the scene of the girl being thrown into the lake that was rediscovered in the 1980s.
Wow.
So that was when it was restored. So yeah,
that's wild. I cannot imagine that movie without that scene.
Yeah, because there must be, so somewhere on YouTube there must be a, like, this is what it looks like with the cut in it. It's pretty, it's usually pretty easy to find those things. It was the National Film Archive that had that original scene, so I bet there is a kind of, like, cut version still floating around on the internet somewhere. But, like, that would just be weird, right? If it doesn't show it, or would it, like,
I mean,
would it,
I
just
guess
cut
you could
away and
it,
then later,
yeah,
like,
because I guess it would go, you could imply, it depends on where they cut it, right? Because if the implication is that he picks her up and then we don't see the actual act, then we see the dad carrying the body later, that would get the same thing across, but it wouldn't be as visceral. Like, that's
true.
That's the thing to me, is it's like, it's so, like, whoa. You know, like, it just catches you so off guard.
Yeah, and also, that would, if it just cut at, like, the monster has picked her up, and then the next thing we see of the girl is her lying dead in her father's arms, the implication of that is that the monster has, like, deliberately done something to her. It takes away the whole meaning of that scene. This is why the code was dumb, because a lot of it was just like, I get that they had their reasons for doing it, but it's also just like, nope, can't have that, nope, can't have that, cut, 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 and then not actually thinking about the intent of that scene and how that completely changes the reading of the film. Because if all you see is the monster pick up the little girl and she's kind of screaming in that moment, isn't she? She's not, you know, happy about whatever is about to happen. But then cut to, she's dead in her father's arms. You just go, oh, that monster has done something horrible. That completely changes not just that scene, but the end of the film as well, where you are perhaps happy that the monster has been destroyed because the monster has killed a little girl.
Yeah.
And yet in the ending of the film, as it is, with all scenes intact, is kind of sad mm-hmm. because we see the monster absolutely terrified and completely freaking out and trapped and not able to get out of this situation and having to suffer while everyone else is happy about it. Mm-hmm. You take out that scene with the little girl and cut it down. This is how important that bit is to the whole film. I think the audience is coming out of it feeling a lot better about themselves. Let's put it that way. They're probably thinking, oh good, I'm glad that happened to that, that monster. Like, you still have that, there's still that, you know, this monster was created by man. They are the ones who have done wrong by bringing this thing to life in the first place. And obviously the ill treatment. But then the bit with the girl, if it's cut, is like the twist of like, oh no, the monster is evil. He killed a child. My mind is blown by how much that scene completely changes the meaning and the intent of the film.
Yeah. Also, while we're talking about that scene where the dad brings the little girl back into the village, James Whale directed the fuck out of this movie, man.
Hell yeah, that scene is incredible.
It's so crazy. It's
my jaw was
shot
on the floor.
Like,
it's so good.
He does that a bunch. He does tracking shots through the set, which was crazy. Like,
bonkers.
I was just like, what is happening? Like, I'd never seen that, something like that in a movie that old. Like, I'm not super well versed in classic movies, but I, like, it feels so modern to have scenes like that in a movie that's 93 years old.
Also, just like, that scene is, it's quite intricate. It's not just one guy carrying the girl like walking through the streets, because there's the wedding party is like going on in the background, Henry and Elizabeth's wedding party, and it's not just a guy walking through the streets with merriment and partying going on around him, because you see the faces of everyone change as they sort of figure out like what is happening, and people going from sort of looking happy and excited and enjoying themselves to being like, what is going on here and why is that guy carrying a dead child? So there's a huge number of extras and background actors in that scene. Stays pretty much fixed on him as he walks through the set and just having to navigate that whole thing.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Like, I don't know. I wasn't expecting that in a film this old. That's not to say that there aren't great filmmaking techniques and shots in films that are this old, but it's like, I don't know. I just, not in Frankenstein. I just wasn't expecting it. It was great.
Elizabeth comes in and talks to Henry. She comes and gets him. And then they walk through and it like follows her from one room to the next in all one unbroken shot. And then it like they hear the creature and then they go upstairs. And so they go upstairs and then it follows them across every room of the upstairs in all one shot. And then they're like the cellar, which really made me laugh because it was like, why the hell? Like, that's the complete opposite of upstairs. Why did you think it was coming from upstairs? And then it just comes in through her room. And it's just like, wait, you guys are really bad at knowing where sound is coming from. But I guess not the point necessarily. But yeah, and then even like the scenes in the lab are super cool. The production design is great.
Great.
But it all looks like, oh, at least in castle, like in the castle, I guess. It all looks like German Expressionist stuff. Like, it's got, like, these weird, like, Caligari angles into the set design.
The stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's, and, like, even the way Boris Karloff plays it is a little bit like the Somnambulist in Caligari as well. Also, while we're talking about it, Boris Karloff is so good in this movie.
so good, because there's the danger of going quite broad with something like that, I think, and just being like, okay, you are the monster, like, be the monster, like, be scary. And there just isn't that, like, a quietness, but also just the way he moves, the physicality of that performance is just great. So good. Like, imagine being that good and not, he doesn't say anything. He just kind of, like, grunts, growls, makes some noises, but, like, you know exactly what he is thinking, feeling, or trying to process, or sort of trying to understand in each moment. Like, even, like, early on when he's sort of, like, getting him to sit, and the bit where he has his hands, like, raised up as well when he opens the roof. Oh, I mean, that's a great shot. That's a great shot.
So I read that as, like, an Icarus thing of, like, trying to get too close to the sun. Right? Like, yeah. And it also, so mobile in that suit. Like, he's on stilts and shit. Like,
yeah. Yeah, because I'm like, they, because I mean, you can kind of see it in the shoes as well, because they look like big and chunky, but it doesn't, the illusion is great. At no point am I like, he's on some stilts or on some, you know, platform things or whatever. I'm just like, no, that's a very, very big man.
Right, like,
walks in a way that someone who has just been made of, you know, spliced together body parts would move. And that's fine, because that's in the character anyway. So, you know, if there's an unnatural quality to his movement, that's fine. But also, it doesn't look funny, like, in a way that you're kind of, like, laughing at the movement or what he's doing. It just works, and it's, yeah, great. So great in this. Like, in the face as well, the expressions, like, ugh.
Yeah, the makeup is so good, too, like... It just, like, it's so married to what this story is. You know what I mean? Like, it just, even when I'm reading the book, like, I picture the Boris Karloff creature. You know, like, it just, it just, like, if you think of Frankenstein's monster, I don't think if I didn't know what this looked like, I could come up with something that looks half as good as this. You know, like, it just, it's they fucking nailed it. Like, it just, this is exactly how it would look. And, like, I can't think of another way for it to look.
Yeah, everything just sort of, like, slightly weird or not right proportions. The way he just carries his arms when he's walking as well. Like, there is a sense of detachment that they don't feel like they are part of that body because... they weren't. And I think that this is what I was saying sort of at the beginning. I think something that we'll talk about a lot on these episodes is the effects, whether that's makeup, practical effects, special effects, whatever, when we eventually get into that. They can really date a film.
Right.
I think nothing ages a film more than sort of the practical effects or, you know, the special effects of the time or whatever. This looks great.
Yeah,
like, if you were to make a Frankenstein film now, I think you should and would still make it look like this. It should still be a person in a suit with makeup used. It should not be CGI or anything. Mocap maybe, but even then, I think I don't know, mocap has come a long way. And it works for certain things, but I think for this, you just need that real sense of presence, and you also need that tangible thing there where it feels like this is a real monster, a real creature.
I also, like, that's a great point, because, I know there's, like, Lisa Frankenstein and... Poor Things out right now, which are Frankenstein riffs. The idea of outright remaking this film is so arrogant to me now that I've seen it. Like, why would you even try? And, like, I know we're staring down the barrel of a Guillermo del Toro Frankenstein for Netflix. And I just, like, why? Why would you even want to do that? Like, I don't see, like, a way in which you're going to improve upon this story. You know what I mean? I guess I haven't seen Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which is the Kenneth Branagh version, but I can't imagine it's as good.
Well, I have heard from our resident Robert De Niro correspondent, aka Martin, who has said that it's terrible.
Okay.
That boy has watched every De Niro film, even the bad ones.
That movie has a tie-in pinball machine.
Of course it does.
Yep.
Of course
yep.
it does.
There is a massive De Niro creature sitting in the middle of that playfield. Yep. Also, at the beginning of that game, you can choose whether you want the score for the film or the Edgar Winter song Frankenstein to play while you're playing that game. Which is real funny.
That is funny. I talking about there being sort of modern versions of it, or other versions of it, or riffs on it, or whatever, no one has ever been more glad than me that the kind of dark universe or whatever it was that they were planning went kaput, because I was reading about what they were thinking of doing with Frankenstein, and I'm like, I'm glad we never had to see that.
Wasn't that the sexy Aaron Eckhart Frankenstein?
Maybe. I think they were talking about... I don't hate this because I like him as an actor, but I think it's a little obvious. They're talking about Javier Bardem being the monster.
Okay.
Yeah. What am I reading here about Jacob Elordi is set to portray the monster in 2024? What is this?
Yeah. I saw that.
Oh, that's the Del Toro one.
Is it? I already barely like that dude's movies.
He's gonna be the Frankenstein's monster.
Mia Goth.
He's too pretty. What are we talking about here? I know they'll make him up, but I also don't really like him. That's unfortunate.
I'm sorry. Christoph Waltz is in this movie, and you're not making him the creature.
I'm guessing he'll be the doctor. Yeah. Right.
Oscar Isaac.
You're going to have Christoph Waltz as a mad scientist. At least he's got the freaking accent, I mean.
Yeah, well, Oscar Isaac is going to be Victor. Because I feel like it's going to be closer to the book. Mia Goth, she annoys me. I don't like her.
I'm reading the Deadline piece about it with the casting and stuff. But I don't want this. If Del Toro was going to give me a Frankenstein, I want it to be stop motion animated, and I will accept nothing else.
Well, he already made that movie. It's called Pinocchio.
Yeah.
That's just Frankenstein.
Man, that film was dark. Whew.
Yes, it was. It was also too long.
Yeah.
Also, just been making Frankenstein his whole career. Like, I don't know why he has to go and just make Frankenstein.
That's the thing. It seemed most people would be like, oh, if anyone could do Frankenstein, then it's Del Toro. Sure. But I just don't know if I need that or want it. Yeah. Maybe it'll be incredible. Maybe it won't be. I'm not sold based on the cast.
No.
At all. And it's...
I mean, honestly, I'm sure there are, like... Oscar Isaac play the creature than Victor Frankenstein.
Yeah... I just don't want it. Do you know what? Like, now that I have seen this Frankenstein, and this is the only Frankenstein that I have seen, I'm like, I don't want another one.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, you should watch Young Frankenstein. Please watch Young Frankenstein.
I will. Look, here's the thing. I have not watched Young Frankenstein, but I feel like that's a good thing, because I also hadn't watched Frankenstein. And if I had just watched Young Frankenstein... I wouldn't have got half the references, but now I feel like I'm in a good position to watch Young Frankenstein.
You are.
We can ignore the fact that you watched Young Frankenstein first. That's irrelevant.
Yeah, a bunch, by the way, like almost annually. There's enough in Young Frankenstein where if you haven't seen Frankenstein, you can love it, I'm sure. Like, well, as a matter of fact, I know, because I hadn't seen Frankenstein until last night, and I love Young Frankenstein. That movie's just got so many good jokes in it. And it is very different because it is not, like, while it is structured skeletally somewhat the same, it is not the same film.
Sure.
You know, the whole idea is that Gene Wilder is a Frankenstein in name only, and that he thinks that they're a bunch of wackos and doesn't want anything to do with them, so he is a reluctant Frankenstein. until he's not. And so, like, that's funny, you know, just in general. It's also, like, just like I said, just got really good jokes and, like, bits. And Marty Feldman as Igor is one of the all-time great comedy performances. Like, it's got such different aims, you know? That, like, that one works. And then Bride of Frankenstein is really good because it gets deeper into the creature discovering a sense of humanity. It's also also directed by James Whale and got Karloff playing the creature again.
I wonder if that's in the box set.
In the big fuck off Blu-ray one, yes it is. The 4K of it is in a separate 4K, which is Bride of Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon, I think Phantom of the Opera, and I don't remember the other one.
The one I was looking at, the Blu-ray, because I don't know if we have the 4K here yet, but the Blu-ray, also I don't have a 4K player yet. I gotta stop buying 4Ks. The Blu-ray, I think, has got Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
In which case...
Oh, she's on the cover.
A good purchase.
She's on the cover of that one, yes.
Great, okay. Yeah, Martin was talking about that earlier. I think he said he hadn't seen it, but wanted to.
Bride? I saw Bride a couple years ago. I've never seen... I saw Bride before I saw Frankenstein, weirdly.
You've watched every Frankenstein-adjacent film, but not,
not Frankenstein, the original. So. Yeah. By the way, the set I have is Dracula, Frankenstein, Invisible Man, Wolfman, not the Mummy. The volume two is Mummy, Bride, Phantom of the Opera, Creature.
Interesting.
Yep.
I think it. Yeah, they might be slightly different, the ones over here, but I had
that's
a quick
the 4K
look.
One.
Okay. It's only £24 for like either 6 or 8 movies. I think it's 8. That feels like a good investment for me. Yeah. And one of the films on there is one that we're covering on this podcast later. Yeah. So guess who'll be buying that shortly.
Yeah, it's a really good movie and you guys should watch it. It's real good. Also, you should watch Young Frankenstein this week. It's also very good.
I will watch it. Hey, maybe I can take that to my and do
I mean I have 100% success rate with it, so
for the listeners, I'm going on a hen weekend bachelorette party for our American listeners.
Thank you.
Next weekend.
Thank you.
And and they unwisely perhaps have left me in charge of bringing the films, so my stupid brain is like, what are the most inappropriate films for a hen do? Young Frankenstein feels like it could be all right. Yeah. No, it's probably, who am I kidding? It's probably going to be like a load of romantic comedies, but good ones. I've got some class.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, of course. But also, Taxi Driver would be funny.
It would be incredibly funny. I was also like, what are the next films that we like need to watch for a podcast?
Yes.
It's King Kong.
Yeah,
the 1933 one,
yeah,
and
Alice Doesn't
Live. Take Care of My Little Girl. I think is the companion film. Hey, do you want to watch this terrible YouTube rip of a film that might not be very good?
Yep. Well, it's like I said in our WhatsApp. Hope you bitches like Robert De Niro and Catholicism.
Yeah, I'm surprised that because. Previous guest Cordelia is also going on this hen do.
So bring Poltergeist.
I'm surprised that she's not sent me a separate message and been like, "How much Scorsese are you gonna bring?" Oh, Poltergeist would slap at a hen do. I mean, if it was mine,
it's like a sleepover.
That's
movie.
What I would. Yeah, do you know what? I think I could. In my head, we're going with like old school sleepover vibes and. In Sarah Land, at least, that was always like a rom-com of sorts, mm-hmm. and then like a teen slasher.
Yeah.
or like a spooky spooky yeah. of some kind. Yeah. So this seems fair, right?
Yeah.
Well, stay tuned. We'll see what I eventually decide.
I can't think of a better sleepover night than 10 Things I Hate About You and Poltergeist.
I mean, sign me up.
Yeah, right? Like...
that is perfect. Oh, do you know what's fun as well? Like, the Final Destination films are fun.
I love
those Scream, one of the Screams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Scream 3, so you can make fun of Courtney Cox's hair.
Woof. Yeah. Or just something that's, like, extremely inaccessible. I'm like, hey, who wants to watch this 3.5 hours?
Solo, the 120 Days of Sodom. I brought the Human Centipede.
Oh my lord. Well, many options.
Sorcerer.
Sorcerer. I recommended that to someone the other day.
Yeah, of course you did.
Yeah, it's me, of course. Yeah. One of my friends was just like, I haven't seen that many movies. I want to see some movies. And I was just like, here's a list. And gave her like 20 films.
Hard Day's Night. Hard Day's Night is a fucking wild sleepover movie. That would be a wild pick. I think that movie's hilarious, yeah. But...
I think I might have to play it a little safer than what I would like to do. But I might take a couple of left field picks see if anyone fancies watching, you know, the original King Kong. Save me some time on pod research. It's all good.
Yep. Blowout. Have you ever seen Blowout?
Nah.
Oh. Oh, that movie's really good. I think you would really like it.
I don't even know if we have it. This is the thing. I need to consult the library of DVDs and Blu-rays that we actually have so I can find some good ones to take. But yeah. We've gotten sidetracked.
Yep.
Anywho's. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. I'm good.
Frankenstein? Yeah. I will watch Young Frankenstein, I promise. I guess, like, final wrap-up thoughts on Frankenstein. It's really good. I don't think there's much more to say to it than that. If you're put off by, quote, old movies, don't be. It's really, really freaking short. It's in and out, no time at all. It's an easy watch. There's nothing in it that is too challenging or odd or strange. It's just a really, really great film.
Yeah.
So if people haven't seen it, I think you got it.
It's just the platonic ideal of a monster movie, I feel like. It's one, the template for everything we're gonna watch, right? Like, I've seen all but one of the other movies on here, and like Frankenstein's in all of them at some level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unintentionally a great place to start. Yeah. I mean, I ordered the films just in release order, yeah. I think. And yeah, you've got to start with one of the originals, right? The one that's sort of the template.
Mm-hmm. Hello, sir.
Is that a cat or a dog?
That's a cat.
I had the dog earlier.
Mm-hmm. We decided that the creature in Frankenstein makes similar noises to this cat. Particularly when he sees
You're not wrong.
Particularly when he sees a sexy lady.
Thelma was quite unsettled by the dogs barking at the end of Frankenstein. She didn't know what they were so mad at.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I don't like these guys.
Yeah. Great movie. Please watch it. Like, it, I feel like I'm gonna say that about every movie on this because a lot of these movies are very near and dear to my heart. But like, it's such a good movie. Like, it kind of doesn't matter. I almost feel like it's one of those horror movies you could show to anybody at any age too. Like, it's not super graphic.
Yeah.
It's not like it's creepy, right? Like it is scary. Like, the end is really scary with the windmill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, despite the fact that fire does not work that way. it's legit, like, unsettling. at the end, but it's not like overwhelmingly so, and it's not like gory, it's not gross, but it's proper creepy. The creature still looks awesome. Like it's mm-hmm. such a good performance. Like I think you could show this to a pretty young kid, depending on their interest level in ooky spooky stuff, to borrow a phrase.
Yeah.
And they'd be not just satisfied, but it's something that you could be like, all right, I didn't like fuck up this kid's psyche. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. Because even the only thing, and I guess this would just be down to people to judge, is obviously the fact that like a little girl gets killed. So kids sort of need to be of the age where they understand that, and yes. it's something that you can sort of talk about, like we have, and sort of talking about, you know, intent and that sort of thing. Obviously, you don't have to go like too deep on that kind of stuff, like with a child. But yeah, there's nothing in this that is, depending on the child, you know, there's nothing in this is going to cause like deep psychological harm.
Yeah.
It's pretty tame by all standards, but it does have that eerie atmospheric mm-hmm. quality to mm-hmm. it that mm-hmm. if you're looking for a kind of all ages spooky watch, is gonna scratch that itch. Another thing as well, sorry, I realize we're wrapping up, but like the complete absence of a score, I think is good in this, because like it's, I didn't notice it until Martin pointed out, and he was like, there's no music. And I was like, you are correct. A lot of the time, especially in scary movies, the music kind of signals something creepy about to happen. And without that, it's kind of like, oh yeah. Like the bit where the monster kind of reawakens and strangles the doctor, that in a movie now would be signaled from a mile away.
Yeah.
Like the jump scare would, you would know that that was coming, and you can see, you know, you see him moving his eyes, you see his hand moving, but it's done in a way that is not kind of like incredibly unsettling. Like it's creepy, but it's not like, oh, that's too much.
Right. Yep. Good movie. Everyone watch it. Thanks to our patrons. Yeah, we did not receive any tweets about this film, so...
Wait a minute,
one. Oh, yes, that's right, we did. Johnny Fourboats himself. Nick.
Nicky Sweatpants.
Yeah, Nicky Sweatpants, host of Nick Flicks. At Nick Flicks Pod. Did send a GIF of Young Frankenstein. A film Sarah has not seen, and also not this film, just in general.
But did make me laugh. I'm guessing people just haven't seen this film.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't even put it out like an hour before we recorded. I did it like 12 hours ago.
Yeah. You were on top of it, actually.
For once.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's him. Okay, it's the gif of him saying it's Frankenstein. So yep. Be on the lookout for something that we did involving Nick in the next couple weeks. It should be out by now. No, by the end of the month, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. And also the Ramblin' Amblin' Guys, all put together by theme song writer and performer extraordinaire Harley Mumford. We were all on a podcast together. Sans Josh was not able to make it, but me, Sarah, Nick, Andy, and Harley all got together to talk about the films of Steven Spielberg, something we all know a little about.
And it was real stupid.
It was real dumb. It was among one of the worst ideas Harley's had. Sorry, Harley, I love you. I'm just kidding.
Brilliant, brilliant chaos.
Yeah, no, it was very fun to record. I have no idea how listenable it will be, but we had a great time. Also, offer still on the table, Harley, if you need help with that edit. As someone who feels partially responsible for why that edit needs some work. But it's real good. So that will be on the Fandamentals feed for his 100th episode. So congrats to Harley on that. It was very, very, very fun to be a part of that. Other than that, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/jawsforaminute. Are we doing The Blob this month? Is that our February episode?
Yeah, that should be our February tie-in, mm-hmm. I believe. My Criterion arrived a few days ago. Nice. Very excited.
Shout out to our patrons, Tim, Eric, Blake, Andrew, Rachel, Katie, Mike, Callum, Cameron, Jack, Chris, and the Uncut Gems podcast for your support. If you'd like to support us, it is $3 a month. You get an archive of bonus episodes, as well as any new content, and you help support the show directly. MJ needs a new microphone. yeah, that's what that's going to be going to, in the future, very, very, very shortly. And so, yeah, everything we make off of that goes directly to supporting making this show as well as our other show, which Sarah will tell you about in a minute. Pun not intended. Yeah, it really means a lot if you part with your hard-earned money every month to support this silly little project. But it goes directly back into making it better and giving you more of hopefully something that you like, especially if you like it enough to give us some coin every month. So thank you guys so, so much for supporting us.
Yeah, definitely. We really, really appreciate it. And it helped us kind of get things started on our other podcast as well. So if you just want some more MJ and Sarah in your lives, and why wouldn't you, then you can listen to our other show, which is called Let's Party with Marty, where we are going through the companion films list that Martin Scorsese put together on his Letterbox and the accompanying film that he directed. We are, at time of recording this, 6 or 7 episodes in and kind of getting into like some of the real meat of Scorsese's career. We've covered Mean Streets, we're not far off Taxi Driver and some of his sort of like really, really big films, but I would say still worth listening to all of the other episodes, even if they're films you haven't heard of. I'm very proud of what we're putting together over there as well. A little bit more of a film history focus than perhaps you get over here, but still with all the same silliness, hijinks, and nonsense that you enjoy with LJ Fam. So wherever you find Let's Jaws for a Minute, you can also find Let's Party with Marty, and we often share the episodes on our social media as well. If you want to follow us on the social medias, we are on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Jaws for a Minute. Individually on Twitter, we are at Sarah Buddery and at MJSmith891. In the links on our social pages, you can find our link tree. That's got the link to our Patreon, where to buy merch, and probably some other things as well that I can't remember. Don't buy a merch from Redbubble because they suck. and also, they've taken our stuff down.
So and also, you can't buy our merch on Redbubble, yeah.
Yeah, so if you find some LJ Fam stuff on Redbubble, it's not us, so don't buy it from there. Please buy it from TeePublic instead. We've also got merch for Let's Party with Marty, and that logo, particularly, I love that. I love the text, yeah. The text only design for that. I have it on a t-shirt, and I've got it on some stickers, and it's real good. Big fan. So, that of course, designed by Alex, who designed our LJ Fam logo as well. So yeah, you can find that on our link tree. If you want to contact us in another way, you can email us at jawsforaminute@gmail.com. We do still have some guest spots for this series. I can't remember off the top of my head which ones we haven't got guests for yet. But if you would be interested in coming on talking about a monster movie of some description, then reach out, send us an email. We'll see what we've got available, and we'd love to have people on. We've got all the usual the usual suspects of guests coming. Yeah, returning, triple, quadruple returning guests, it feels like at this point. But yeah, all the people you love hearing in previous seasons we've got coming back. So yeah, we do have a couple of empty slots if you would like to come on. I think that is everything for now. Our next main season episode is gonna be King Kong.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. Original King Kong is like gonna be our next film. If you want to watch ahead.
Yep.
Well, be very organized.
I do want to let everyone know right now, some tough stuff in that movie.
Sure.
But pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, we will, well, like we always do, address that, but also like look at the movie as was then and as is now and talk about that in detail. Also will be a first watch for me, so excited for
I'm
that
so excited.
One. until next time, it's Jules O'Clock Somewhere.